welcome to episode 28 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. Each week we will talk about different adventures and vacation options out there, some local, some more exotic. Join us as we chat about our own travels and those of our clients. Hopefully our talks will help you dream, plan, and get out there. My name is Elizabeth, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy, Robin, Lindsay, and Andy. Have you ever had your memory jogged by a certain smell or sound? Maybe a taste of an exotic fruit or the feel of the wind in your hair transports you to another place in time. We rely on our senses more than we realize, not just for our immediate surroundings, but for their power to make us remember events. In today's episode, we thought it would be fun to explore what recalled memories have been triggered by our senses. Let's get started. So, Sandy, I know this is a favorite topic of yours. You want to kick things off?
So many things remind me of so many great memories. So, the reason I thought of this topic was the other day I was cleaning out under the cabinet in my bathroom and I found a couple of shampoos from Disney Cruise Line, which if you've ever done the Disney Cruise Line, they give you this awesome green shampoo that smells really, really good. And I was so happy because I thought I had used it all up. But
What does it smell of that's so evocative of?
Shampoo.
Yeah. No!
If I'm going to go to my local CVS and pick up like some VO5 or whatever.
You know, that's a good question.
Well, I mean, what is it about it then that really makes it?
Just a very distinct smell. And Lindsay, I know you're the scent person, so you might be able to tell me what is in it, but I don't know what's in it. I just know that it's very distinct and that it's green.
Some of that has to do, probably the one thing that stands out in my mind the most, there used to be a shampoo called Salon Selectives. Maybe they still make it. I don't know. But it smells like apples. The first time I ever used it was when I was in Hawaii. And I was in Hawaii for like a week, and then I came home, and every time I used that shampoo after that, I was in high school, all the way through college, pretty much until I finally gave up on Salon Selectives, I felt like I was right back in Hawaii again. It was amazing how it would, and it was just apples. I mean, I don't even think you can get apples in Hawaii, but it was because I had never used it before until that time, and so that was the memory association with it.
I think Disney shampoo has like a citrus scent to it. It's like a grapefruit citrus something.
I don't know what it is, but I do remember it. Well, yeah.
But I agree. I mean, scent and aroma just can really throw you back to any place in time. I can smell it. Like cooking pancake batter. It immediately makes me think of France and crepe. Mm-hmm. Particularly
Wait,
when
did
I,
you
I,
say,
I
looked what there did, as a, did you say?
That was crepe with an I'm sorry. I know I have an accent. That sort of cooking batter and the powdered sugar and the cinnamon and that combination of aromas takes me back to just sort of walking through subways in Paris or in other provincial towns in France, just where they have these little street vendors cooking these things up on the side of the road and selling them almost, you know, well, in Paris, they're not quite next to nothing. That really takes me back to somewhere like that. I think aroma and scent is just a very, very, you know, strong memory jogger.
When I was younger, I went to Puerto Vallarta with a friend of mine, and we used, at the time, suntan oil, and then it had a coconut smell. And every time I smell coconuts now, it brings me back to the beach there. I remember putting that on, and it just still, 20 years later, I still remember it.
Yeah, and if you could actually find it. It would take you right back.
That actually reminds me.
Slather it off.
Yeah. I have a good friend who actually thought that Pirates of the Caribbean had a smell, and he realized after going like 100 times, he finally realized it was actually the sunscreen that they were all wearing because they would sit together, and he's like, "Oh, it's our because you always use the same sunscreen," and he never quite realized that was what it was.
The water does have a smell, and well, so
I'm with you on
the
that
worst
one.
Library smell in Spaceship Earth, like, and there are so many scents, and I caught myself a couple years ago. It was ridiculous. My husband, we were in the grocery store, and I was walking down the aisle with the detergents, the laundry soaps, and whatever, and I caught just a whiff of something that smelled like what they pipe into Mickey's PhilharMagic. Mm-hmm. And I could not leave that aisle for like 20 minutes trying to figure out what they smelled. Because I was like, I have to have that. I couldn't find it. But it was just like 1 second in time that I just that whiff. I was like,
Another friend of mine actually accidentally bought a hand cream at, I think, Whole Foods. And the first time she used it, we were actually at Disney together. But she opened it up and put it on her hand. She went, smells like Soarin'. Yeah. And it was like oranges, Soarin' the ride at Walt Disney World. It was like oranges and pine scent. So you got both of those scents. And she was like, it smells just like Soarin'. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, see, Disney knows. Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah, the other aroma that really jogs, actually a different sensation for me as well, is I can smell malt vinegar. And it takes me back to the coast of Northwest England. And just fish and chip stores.
It just makes me salivate
because it was that acerbic acidic kind of aroma to it.
Taste and smell, I think, kind of go together. But I remember the first time I went to California, my cousin took us to Tijuana, and we were drinking.
Where's the story going, Sandy?
Well, we were drinking. It was Dos Equis, and when I got back home, I decided that was my favorite beer, and that's the one I wanted to drink because it reminded me of that trip. You know, that I wasn't old enough to drink in the United States; I was only old enough to drink in Mexico.
So it was a long time.
It was a long time ago. Oh, they didn't even card me.
Did
in
it
Mexico.
Taste the same when you drank it again?
I think it did. In my head, it did. You know, it was. But you know, like I used to drink like these vodka drinks when I was in college and stuff, and I would always have like a Madras or, you know, screwdriver or something like that. And now when I order them, I don't know if it's because nobody orders them anymore, so bartenders don't make them that much, but it just, that doesn't ever bring me back like that beer did.
Well, as far as liquors go and alcohol, I think that's probably ouzo is one of those things that, you know, the first time I had it was in Greece, and I'm so glad because honestly, the only reason one would ever drink ouzo is to be transported back to Greece, because other than that, you know, it pretty much is designed to kill you. That, I mean, when I taste that, and I have other licorice foods, you know, I loved black jelly beans when I was a kid, but the taste of ouzo has enough licorice, but enough kerosene to taste exclusive. And the thing is, ouzo tastes like ouzo. I mean, I've either just been fortunate enough that I've never had such bad ouzo that it didn't taste like it, but wherever I have it, if it's in America or if it's in, you know, Germany or if it's in Japan, whatever, it tastes like ouzo. It is ouzo. And it takes you right back to Greece.
I think it's so interesting you brought up like ouzo, because I had ouzo in Greece too, but for me it was a completely different memory that it triggered. It actually triggered a memory from the States. So it was the opposite because I used to bartend, and I had a guy that was all he would drink. And I would just shot after shot after shot, and the stickiness and the whatever, and it just automatically makes me think of him and of that moment in time. So I think it's so fascinating how powerful these scents and tastes can be, and how they can transport you, even like the most mundane thing like popcorn. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody has some type of reaction to popcorn scent.
Yeah.
Yeah, not always a good one.
Especially burnt.
When I did the Disney College program in 93, I was in downtown Disney and got these cinnamon sugar cookies, snickerdoodles. And they were different than any of the others I had ever tasted, and they were so good. And I went to San Diego, I moved there, and we were someplace at the Seaport Village, and I tasted these cookies, and they tasted exactly like the ones at Disney. And it just brought me back there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then for years, I've been trying to find the same ones at Disney. Never could find them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've changed something, you know, and then it won't be the same. Mm-hmm. It's like so different. Yeah, we actually bought a cookbook at the Food and Wine Festival one year so we could try to recreate the cheese and beer soup from Canada. And no matter how much, I mean, we would spend like $30 on cheese trying to make this and we couldn't make it taste the same, you know, although
I think you'd have been better served spending that money on the beer.
It's a good point, actually.
Well, you know, I didn't put Mick Ultra in it. I put whatever beer they said.
Well, you know, and there's actually that is sort of a big frustration too, because the first time I ever had polenta was in Italy. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what it was. I was very young, and I was introduced to it in sort of, we were hiking, which is something I didn't love doing, but I was doing anyway, and I should have appreciated it more. And we stopped in this little, you know, tavern, I guess, for a snack and some water on the hiking trail somewhere, and they brought out this huge wedge of this cheesy polenta. I was like, all right, I'll try it. It's got cheese on it. How bad can it be? It was so good. And I have made polenta. I have tried to make polenta. I've roasted it. I've baked it. I've done everything you could possibly do to polenta. I've had polenta in very good restaurants. Never the same. Never
that reminds me of a story that some friends had told me about whenever my kids were in Cub Scouts. These dads were putting their kids through Cub Scouts for the sole purpose of them one day going on a trip with them back to New Mexico to this high adventure camp that they've done, where I guess they camp like, I don't know, they hike like however many days and they come to this little general store and I think they made their own root beer or something. And these dads, like, they all start talking about this root beer. Oh yeah, we all gotta get back there. I don't know if their kids are still in Scouts and if they're going to make it.
I was
going
to say, I'd love to hear if
that. My kid didn't make it that far, so he kind of dropped out. But it's the same thing, you know, you think about that one thing, and it makes you wonder if it really was that good, or if you just made it that good in your head.
Or if it was the moment, if it was what you were doing at the time, or the people that you were with, and the memories that you were making that made it that good. Because, I mean, like, for me, going out east, pizza, that's the draw for me. I remember growing up and spending a couple of years in New Jersey and having that experience with pizza, and, you know, you romanticize about it in your mind. This was the best pizza I've ever had in my whole life. Then I get to go to Naples, and then I have pizza there, and I'm pretty sure that was probably the best I've ever had in my whole life.
Yep, and they're also different.
Yeah.
That's how I am with oysters. I'm grew up near Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and if you go to, like, the North Carolina coast and you go buy oysters, they're completely different oysters. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre, but...
Well, we could do, like, an entire podcast series. In fact, there probably is one on traveling North Carolina for barbecue, because you can go from one town to another, and it's different. And not only is it different, but people will insist that it is the right one. So
I'm going to stop you there, Elizabeth. You've got to include the Carolinas. North Carolina.
No, I don't.
And I will say that because I'm not from here. So, I'm not a barbecue expert, but, you know, people here in South Carolina are quite proud of what they
produce. They're curious about their barbecue.
Very serious.
And the best places are the hole in the wall that you wouldn't think you'd ever
absolutely
go in.
Actually, eating the picking type places, those are the best.
Yeah.
That is that when you're traveling, if you follow the locals, and my husband and I did that in Aruba, we couldn't figure out where to eat. And so we followed a work truck off the beaten path down a residential area to some little shanty, like, where they would sell snow cones during a baseball game. The lady had just taken the stick out and propped the metal roof up, and it was like the best food we had that whole entire trip, and it was so much of it was so cheap, and I don't want to know how it was paid.
I agree. You've got to travel like a local. You've got to follow the locals. I mean, I guess that's kind of going into the site. You figure out who the locals are. I was in Cozumel last summer, and it's a very, very touristy place, and, you know, you can eat at Hard Rock Cafe or Margaritaville and have a very American experience. But what I insisted my kids and I do, we actually wandered back about 6 blocks and found the local market. And once my kids had kind of been traumatized by seeing all these dead animals hung up, we actually found...
Parenting win!
We're in therapy right now. Don't but we actually found, they said, well, Dad, we're thirsty. And I said, well, okay, looking around. I see this little hole in the wall, basically a local guy doing smoothies. And he had fresh fruit, he had guava, he had strawberry, he had apricots. And with the local, you know, pasteurized milk.
We're just going to say
okay. They're still good. But he made them these local smoothies with a blender on this little countertop on the corner of the street. That's the sort of memory that they wouldn't have got at Margaritaville or the Hard Rock Cafe. Traveling like a local, it doesn't matter whether you're in Mexico or Europe or anywhere in the States, try the local food, try the local pizza or the hoagies or whatever it is that the place is known for. And find the most authentic place you can that's doing that. And that'll trigger those memories in years to come.
So we've talked a lot about food, which is not surprising, and a little bit about booze, which is also not surprising. But there are other senses, too. So what about some of the other ones? Maybe sound would be an easy one. Is there a sound that you hear that takes you back to something?
So for me, we are big concert-going people. For me, there's always been, like, a soundtrack of the summer, you know? And if I pop in whatever, you know, I remember driving with my friends, singing the top of my lungs to this tape while we were going to the first Lollapalooza, since I've already really shown my age here. You know, so for me, it's always music. It's always coming back to whatever I had on heavy rotation, you know, that year.
Yeah, I had a Beatles tape, cassette tape, that I listened to in my Walkman. Him going on trains, the first time that I rode trains through Europe, and I listened to that thing over and over again. And it was Beatles music. You hear it all the time, but I think because I was playing it at that time and pretty much had it on repeat, which didn't exist on Walkman. But, you know, yeah, I manually repeated over and over again. And interestingly, I must have left it on the train somewhere because it didn't make it back to America with me. So that was actually the last time I had that tape. Now I have other Beatles. It's not like the Beatles are dead to me or anything, but that particular one.
Well, it's kind of good because now you probably don't have a cassette player.
It is true. It is true. It would be a relic right now.
For me, it's Bob Marley takes me right back to Jamaica. And it's weird because I had such a strong connection with Bob Marley before I went to Jamaica. I always associated that music with my dad, being out on the farm, being outside, and he would always have playing in the barn, or, you know, or in the farm truck, I'd just replay. But now whenever I hear it, I am on a bouncy, crazy bus that's going way too fast down scary roads in Jamaica. Every time I listen to Bob Marley.
You're not really selling Jamaica really well.
Yeah, I know, right?
I know.
It's funny, you mentioned Bob Marley. I was thinking the same thing, Lindsay, but it's a complete, I'm on the other side of the world. Bob Marley, archetypal Jamaican music, the reggae, it takes me back to Eastern France. And I know that
really?
May sound strange, but I used to go to this little bar when I was a student in France, and they had a turntable, and that's the only music they had. There was no jukebox, nothing else. They never had live bands in there, but they only had three LPs. Two of them I've never heard of, and one is Bob Marley's Greatest Hits. And it just takes me back. They put this, we would put this LP on, and we'd play it with the stylist in the right place, and No Woman, No Cry would come on. And everybody would get up on the tables and dance. It's just one of those long-lasting memories that will stick with me. Whenever I hear that, it just takes me back to when I was a student in France. And it's just, absolutely, it's incredible. I mean, I see the whole Jamaican thing, I get it, but you know, people don't think of me as France.
I never associated, I came from Jamaica, and I know, you know, the big history and the love of Bob Marley there, but I had never associated it with Jamaica before I went on that trip.
It's just party music.
Right. You know, it's funny because when I was in Jamaica, I didn't really hear anything but Bob Marley. And I remember thinking, you know, surely they have to have somebody else. They are totally trying to cater to what we think it should be.
Ziggy Marley.
Yeah, I know, right?
Actually, when I was in Italy at that same time that I had the polenta, I was young. I was about 15 years old. And so I was hanging out with other teenagers. We were sort of exchanging music. And I remember... So I did, when I was there, I bought a cassette tape of Eros Ramazzotti, I think is how you say his name.
Eros Ramazzotti.
Yes. huge pop star while I was there. Yeah. And so actually recently I went to an Italian restaurant here in town and they were actually playing that CD. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is a real Italian place. They're playing real Italian music. They're not just playing, you know, funicula. But, anyway, the irony there is as they introduced me to him, they were also listening, of course, to American pop music, which is actually how I learned that Madonna is actually a curse word in Italian. It actually makes sense. But I was like, why is everybody talking about Madonna? I didn't understand it at all. But Papa Don't Preach came out that year.
Yeah.
And so they actually asked me to translate it because they couldn't figure out what she was singing about, which is really awkward when you're 15 years old, I have to say. So not only do I have Eros Ramazzotti to think about with Italy, but I also have Madonna's Papa Don't Preach. Take me right back there.
Well, I made a lot of the senses, but the one that I don't know whether it's the hardest one to kind of quantify in this kind of thing, but it's the sensory, the touch sensation. Anybody got anything for that one? I've got a couple, but I want to see if you guys have.
This makes it sound so crazy, but I have this thing for big, fluffy, white towels and clean, crisp sheets. And that being able to close your eyes and almost imagine you're on vacation, for some reason I associate that, which should tell you how I'm on vacation.
I wasn't going to say it.
That is a good one because hotel beds do feel different.
I love that feeling I'm really picky about my towels at home because of that, because I want that luxurious feeling. It makes me feel like I'm in a resort.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I went to boarding school. I have no.
they barely gave you towels, didn't they? They're little dish rags. Here you go.
I can feel, it's not really something that really takes me back, but the one thing I love to do when I travel, particularly somewhere that's got a lot of history, be it a 900-year-old castle or even something that sort of dates back to sort of the days of early Christianity. It's just feeling that stone.
Yeah.
And you can just feel the passage of time and what those stones and what they, or whatever it is you're touching have seen. It could be a piece of wood, just anything like that. The coolness of the stone, if it's inside, or the fact that it retains the heat of the sun, if it's in, for example, Greece or Turkey or somewhere like that, that just really sort of makes me feel sort of part of where I am, makes those memories just that I take back with me whenever I go back home. And it's just a really strange sensation, but it's just, what have these stones seen? What have they witnessed?
I feel the same. Like when I was in Ireland, all I wanted to do was touch everything. Past the cathedral, and I know a lot of places you go, you're not supposed to touch anything, but that connection with the history, mm-hmm. It's almost like you're reaching out and you're touching the past.
Cologne Cathedral is another one to me. I just want to touch that. It's a grimy exterior, but it's just that cold rock. And it's not just, you know, the fact that it's 900 and some years old, it's the fact that it's bore witness to two world wars taking place in relatively close proximity. You know, I think that sort of really sort of is quite evocative.
Yeah, when I was on the Great Wall, there were loose rocks where the wall is falling apart.
You were on the sketchy
part. I might have been on a part that you're not supposed to be on. And so you can pick up a loose rock and think, who held this rock? You know, somebody actually placed this rock, or it might have been part of a larger rock. But still, it really is something to, when you put your hands on it, you can sort of imagine what it's been over history.
When we went to the pyramid, being at the pyramid and just touching and just thinking about how, I mean, to me, I know that there's logistical ability for how it was built, but it, to me, it just still seems like magic.
Yeah.
Because they're just so massive and the amount of labor that went into it.
They were hewn by sort of their hand for us. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just incredible.
Robin, you were going to say something.
I was going to say my grandparents were in Berlin about the time that the Berlin Wall was coming down. And I remember they brought a piece home. And whenever my grandmother saw it, she said it just made her, just touching it made her feel back there, like she was back there. Because it was just so incredible, and it was something that, it was history.
Yeah. Powerful. I actually have a long, long time ago, boys and girls, film used to come in little canisters. And when you would travel, you would actually have to carry film. and so when you'd use the film, you'd have this canister, and they're often kind of watertight. The canisters were. And when I was on a glacier in Alaska, I actually was able to reach down and I scooped up this water with my canister and closed it up. And I still have it. It's perfectly clear, like the day that I got it. Nothing has grown in it. Nothing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So to me, it's like this magic water. Of course, the kids probably will find it and dump it out, you know, or drink it. And then they'll have eternal life.
Superpowers.
Yeah. I used to say that I had these noble intentions of taking sand from everywhere I had been. And my husband had brought sand back from Iraq, and I thought, oh yeah, everywhere I go, I'm going to bring sand, and I only have sand from a couple places, but I do have some stones, beautiful stones that I haven't seen anywhere else, beaches, and it's so neat to touch, when I pull them off my shelf, and you hold them in your hand, and you get it almost like it takes you back to the moment that you grab them.
It's seeing different sand of beaches, and you know, the sand that you have here on the eastern coast of the United States is so completely different from the golden sands of the beaches that I saw in Europe. And I remember seeing black volcanic sand coming from Tenerife. Mm-hmm. It was just, it's jet black. Mm-hmm. And this is how the beaches are in Tenerife, out in the Atlantic. And the Canary Islands, you just don't realize that, you know, sand can be so many different colors.
Bermuda has pink sand.
I remember seeing a black sand beach in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really unreal, isn't it, when you're used to sort of white sand beaches.
Another thing with sound is the shell. Mm-hmm. I remember as a kid, we would bring home shells and we would listen to them. And that sound would just bring me back to going to the beach.
That's a good one, yeah.
Also makes you feel really young, which is awesome.
And she said, made me think.
I did that last week with my daughter, actually, at the beach.
Absolutely.
Well, that is our show for this week. On behalf of Sandy, Robin, Lindsay, Andy, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we will see you next week. Gotta fly.